I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Welcome back to What It Takes. It's the podcast where business owners pull back the curtain on their journey, the wins, the lessons, and everything in between. And today's guest is someone who truly lives the mission behind his business. Ari Drossman is a disruptor, a deep thinker, a lifelong creative with a heart for healing. He's spent over two decades in mental health space, and he's the founder and chief visionary officer of Resurface Group. This is a mental health and addiction treatment organization, and it's built for the outliers, those who never quite fit the mold. And Ari's not your typical founder. He started his professional path studying English and philosophy before he even made that shift into psychology. He surfs, he farmsteads, he plays music. He brings that same hands-on integrative energy into his work. And whether he's tending to his chickens, consulting with clinical teams, or working one-on-one with clients, Ari is always asking, how can we do better? This conversation dives into why he built Resurface, what it really takes to help people who feel misunderstood, and how innovation, heart, and humility guide his work every single day. And I am so looking forward to this conversation. Ari, welcome to What It Takes.
Thank you so much. That was an amazing intro. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I hope I did you justice. I'm so excited. Man. Like I told you before we started, I'm so excited to be talking to you. Some of this stuff hits really close to home. And so I hope our listeners, if it's something that like an area or space that they're not familiar with, that they learn something along the way. And if maybe some of the things in our conversation hits close to home that maybe you haven't really thought about, but you recognize some of the things in your life that maybe, you know, it's something that they can get help with or, you know, learn more about. So let's start at the very, very beginning. What drew you into psychology after you originally started studying English and philosophy?
I feel like I was dragged, a little reticent. I'd had people who really became mentors throughout my life say, you'd be a great therapist. And my canned answer was, dealing with me is enough. Dealing with a whole group of me would be overwhelming. And I had a professor as I was studying to get my teaching credentials say the same thing. And I told her the same thing. And she said, well, you might as well check it out. And at the time, I had an opportunity to start taking some classes and do field work from the get-go. And so that's what I did, is I figured if I'm going to explore it, I need to do it. I can't just sit in a classroom and learn about it in order to be able to tell everybody that I confirmed that they were wrong. And so I took some classes, started doing some work right out of the gate, and I had a transformative experience with a client. Excuse me. Where I was working weekends and I would come in on Friday, leave on Monday. And at about midnight on Friday or Saturday, this woman came down and she was in distress and really dysregulated. Spent about an hour, hour and a half with her. And she walked away saying, thank you. I feel so much better. I'm going to go back to bed. And while she was walking away, that was when all of their admonitions or forecasting really came to fruition. And I realized that they were right. The ability to be present with somebody's healing is just the most sacred and precious and honorable space for me to be in. And I didn't know that I was going to feel so connected. So that was the moment that I decided to focus on psychology instead of teaching. And I went full bore into it. And here we are a couple of decades plus later. And I couldn't be more happy and more honored to be in this space.
Yeah. And you said your work has always focused on outliers. And I actually really love that. But like, tell me what you mean by that. What does that word mean to you? How does it shape the foundation of Resurface Group?
So the beginning of my career, I worked in traditional treatment for about 15 years. So mental health and substance use disorder treatment, residential, outpatient, all the different things that are still in existence. And I would just have clients that would come through that the fit was just okay. It wasn't a great fit. And I always ask the question, like, what can we do better? And how can this be better? And this personal, professional, in all domains of my life, that's just a constant for me. And so I really noticed that there had to be opportunities that they could access that fit them better than what they were getting. And so I called around. I had one client and I called around, and he had all these multiple things going on in his life, problems with family, and they were out of town, and he'd been adopted and all these different things. And so I called around. And I said, this is what's going on with this client. Do you guys do all these things? And they said, no. And there were a lot of closed doors. And so I knew how to do it. I was capable, and I saw the whole thing. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to build something around you. And so that's really where this whole thing started. And so an outlier, even using him as a jumping off point, are people that really have unique needs that aren't served inside of the box. And so there are so many different people and so many different kinds of people that fit that. There's not really a clear categorization for that. The neurodivergent community oftentimes is an outlier, especially in milieu-based treatment. People of elite wealth are often an outlier in the need for deep privacy and processing their unique circumstances. Situations where the family is what I call the symptom bearer. So, you know, somebody who's diagnosed, what about a family who could be diagnosed? They don't have anything that fits. What about somebody who excels in one area of their life, but is absolutely killing themselves in another, and they need to stay in that successful area of their life in order to be able to be well, so they can't disrupt their life and go somewhere to be able to really heal. So an outlier is just somebody who doesn't fit. And so the way I like to think about it is, it's like we're the Goonies treating all the rest of the Goonies of the world. And so if someone's a Goonie, they're our people, and that's our whole focus.
That's wonderful. And Resurface takes a very integrated, non-traditional approach to mental health. I'm pretty familiar with that, but for those that aren't, what are some of the biggest ways that that differs from more mainstream treatment models, like you were talking about, more in the box? Hey, mm-hmm. This is the code. This is how we treat that code. And this is how we bill for that or whatever. That gets really, really tricky when you're talking about the way that you... talking about things the way that you're talking about them. Can you just explain kind of those differences a bit?
Yeah. So there's kind of three categories for treatment. There's inpatient, residential, and outpatient. Inpatient is hospital-based. Residential is where there's a brick-and-mortar facility where people live there. Outpatient is a brick-and-mortar facility where people go and receive treatment in whatever space. And we take a life-based approach. So we're in the home, in the office. I'm in California, so out in the ocean, really integrated into people's life. And so our schedule always attends to the normal life schedule of the family that we're working with. So they don't disrupt any of their natural flow and rhythm of life. And we find the spaces in between in order to do our work. So we're very experiential. We're very integrated. It's not uncommon to see me sitting at a table with a whole family having a family meal as a therapeutic exposure experience, gathering data. It's really a very, very rich experience. And so a lot of differences. We do have offices where we do deep trauma work, contained family work. So there is space to be able to really hold that, but that's not our go-to. And we don't offer any group work. And so there really is a purely individualized experience that they get. And that's our whole focus, because each system that we work with is uniquely themselves. And they need to be given the services that are uniquely perfect for them. And so even if there are similarities between two systems, and I mean families or a family system, it's never identical. It's never copy and paste.
Yeah. And that sounds all wonderful to me, theoretically, but I can't imagine it's come without its challenges. What have been the most eye-opening challenges in building an organization like this from both a clinical and a business standpoint? Because everything that I'm hearing you saying, I'm like, well, what does that cost you as a business? Because I know the models for either reimbursement when it comes to insurance versus private pay, you know, that kind of cuts out a huge demographic of people to be able to have those services. So talk a little bit about your clinical challenges that you faced, you know, with clients, and then from a business standpoint as well.
Yeah, thank you. I'd say the two primary clinical challenges that we faced are the miseducation of therapists and psychologists, seeing what we do as something that we're doing something we're not supposed to. So I've had many conversations over the last 22 years, sitting down with people and really going through our code of ethics to help them understand that this is incredibly ethically sound. And because we're benchmarking something new, there's a real lack of understanding. And so the integration for our clinicians takes about 3 to 6 months. And there's a real unwinding of some things and a real learning of different things. And so it's challenging because this is not something that is taught in school. And I have opinions about what we're taught in therapy school, which I may or may not get into. They're very critical opinions. I think that we're in dire need of an update to our operating system in psychology, and we're willing to take risks in order to help push our field forward. And so you asked specifically kind of like tailored toward the billing aspect of the challenge.
Yeah, the business side, yeah.
It's a very real thing. We've been in consultation with some managed care, some insurance carriers for about 4 years now, really trying to create a new model to be built. We have a lot of data that supports that we're helping people to really stay well. It's not just about getting well, which is very focused in that 30, 60, 90 day model. We are really helping people to stay out of the hospital, stay out of treatment, all those kinds of things. So we're unpacking that, but it is new. And so there's incredible challenges with that. So we are private pay. We aim to be able to provide this care for people that are insurance dependent. It is one of our great passions to be able to make this approachable for every economic strata. We're not there yet. We're still climbing that hill. And we provide super bills for people and whatnot. So we do our best to be able to to make it as affordable and approachable and sustainable as possible. And we keep our costs as low as possible. So we believe in making sure that our margins are appropriate to be able to be healthy as an organization and provide sustainable care to other people in a digestible financial way.
Well, I mean, I just encourage you keep fighting that fight because it's desperately needed. And California usually kind of leads the charge in a lot of different ways. And especially when it comes to insurance, if you've got the data and you can show them how they can save money over the lifetime of the, you know, insured versus, you know, right then and there, I think you're on the right track in that. So just keep doing it. It's very important work and it's definitely needed. But how do you do all that though? Because you're still involved with clients, right? Like you still work with your, okay. So how do you balance that with also being a visionary leader and keeping that at the forefront and pushing forward in that? But also, I mean, you're a business owner too. So there are things that you have to do to run the business, and we work with all business owners. And so that's, I think, one of those things where it's really tough to balance being in the business versus working on the business. And I know for myself personally, it was quite a journey. It took, you know, years. I'm in my 10th year of running this business. And I don't think I got to this point where I'm not currently working with clients anymore, but I was for probably the first 8 or 9 years. It's only been in really the last year that I've even been able to focus on this. And so I'm interested to hear how you're still doing this after 22 years in the business and what, you know, kind of what that give and take looks like for you.
Full transparency, I haven't hit balance yet.
Okay.
I just,
fair enough.
That is a real work in progress. And, you know, my passion and my dedication, I mean, it's so hard because we're here to help. And it's a really challenging thing for me to be in a position to help somebody heal and not access that opportunity. Excuse me. I'm far more balanced than I ever have been. I definitely can be accused of historically and somewhat presently working too much. my wife and I are so deeply integrated. And so this is something that actually she and I developed clinically in the beginning, separately, but together. So we did it with individual clients, but we really walked this journey together. And so there's so much connection that's still there. So it's actually something that I am welcomed to bring home with me. So there is some real benefit to that as well. And I have an amazing family around me. I don't even know that I could say that they're a team, but an amazing family around me that holds me accountable to taking care of myself. And so for any and all business owners, we know the buck stops here. And I don't have anyone to be able to, at the end of the day, defer to. I have a lot of people to rely on. And so I take that responsibility incredibly seriously. And I'm willing to do some extra work now so that the organization is and remains healthy far beyond me. And so we're in our seventh year. And so we're definitely stable and there's still work to be done. So I'm looking at some opportunities to be able to make some transformation in the next year or two that's going to give me a bit more space and freedom. So, and we've been intentionally building toward that. So I do know that there are more opportunities ahead. And to answer your question in finite detail, I practice a lot of presence. And so even if it's not a lot of time, I can have deep presence with the time that I have. And that affords me to maintain an internal sense of balance. Even if my calendar is very, very full, that doesn't mean that I'm out of sway. So
yeah, that's great. And you're also, I mean, look, you're a dad, you're a surfer, farmsteader, and you talked about your personal life support. But I had imagined that, you know, you're talking about balance. And I think balance implies like one or the other, right? Because we see the scales and it's like, you know, tipping back and forth. But the way I kind of look at it as a business owner is work-life, instead of work, it's not work-life balance, it's work-life integration. And I've talked about it on the podcast before. But I think when you think of it more of that way, it becomes a lot less, like you feel a lot less guilty about having to choose one or the other. It's about how do I integrate all of this into my life? And it is really important. I love what you're saying about that. How does it inspire your professional mission though, when you have a lot of that personal support? Because I kind of want to like shift gears into the team since you mentioned your personal support team, but like your team culture, how do you nurture a team that supports such deeply personal transformative work as well?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's actually something that I'm not the only holder, but I'm definitely the primary holder at Resurface Group, is we foster deep connection amongst all of us. And any therapist or clinician that's coming aboard, I let them know we are all in relationship with one another. So if you want to be able to just go to work and leave work at work and leave home at home, we're not the best fit for you. So we're very integrated. Everybody knows what's going on in each other's lives, not in the greatest and most intimate detail. Sometimes, yes, not always. And it offers us an opportunity to proactively show up with support for one another. This work is hard. We're exposed to other people's trauma all day long. Another thing that we do is our full-time position is a 30-hour work week. I have the expectation that everybody takes care of themselves as they're doing the work. And so we want people to know that you don't have to overproduce in order to be of value, that who you are and how you are is the greatest value that you have. So please take care of yourself. Everybody also is the owner of their own schedule. And so we have parents that I work alongside. I'm a parent. And so if they need to take their kids to school, we should not plan to have them see clients until after 9:30. And so there's a lot of freedom and flexibility and independence that everybody has. There's a lot of interconnectivity. We're all in relationship with one another. There's tons and tons of support moment to moment, day to day. And there's a real awareness that everybody is living life and doing work. And so I remember reading a book, and it was Arthur Blank, and he talked about asking all of his employees, like, why are you willing to give your life for this job? And what he meant was not why are you willing to die for it, but why are you willing to spend your life here? And so I've carried that into our entire culture is you are giving of your life to be here. Why is that important? And how can we support you in that? And so we're very intentional about carrying this all the way through. I believe if I'm not healthy, how can I heal? And so we're all healers. And so it has to start here. That is our primary objective, is that it starts with being healthy people so that we can then transmit that to the people that we get to serve.
All of that is wonderful, just from the team and the philosophy with that, all the way through to the, if I'm not healthy, how can I heal? That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So I'm just going to jump right into our signature question, which is, what does it really take to be a business owner in this day and age, in your space, whatever your interpretation of that is? But business, you know, like you were saying, the buck stops here, and it's a very unique role to be in. And I can see that you take that level of responsibility very seriously. So I'm really interested to hear your take on what does it take?
There's so many things that I can, I'm going to flood you with a few things. It takes grit. It takes commitment. It takes moral integration and a steadfast attachment to doing what's right. It takes awareness, knowing that not having a boss means that everybody is my boss. It takes an awareness of self and a willingness to grow and change. I celebrate my misses, my mistakes, my failures. Those are the best. I love it when I walk in and tell everyone, hey, I really blew it. I need everyone's help to clean this up because I was trying hard. I don't want people to make mistakes because they're not trying. I want them to make really wonderful mistakes because they're trying too hard. And it takes a level of humility to be able to be present, to connect with everyone, including oneself. And so some of these characteristics may be unique to our industry, but some of them I think are pretty universal.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's so good. And Ari is proof here that being a business owner isn't just about strategy. Clearly, it's about soul. He's built a space where misunderstood people can even feel seen, supported, empowered to heal on their own terms. And it starts with having your own term, like the people on his team having their own terms. And, you know, just kind of that we've got to be here first before we can do that. So he's done it while staying deeply human himself, which I love. And I can hear that in this conversation. Ari, if people can want to reach out to you, they want to learn more about what the incredible work that you're doing, or even just getting in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you? How do they find you guys?
So we have contact information on our website, resurfacegroup.com. If anyone wants to connect with me directly, you can email me at ari@resurfacegroup.com. I'm always happy to have conversations with people. It's really one of the things that I get to do that I'm passionate about and I'm unrelenting with. So either one provides a ton of information. We're a small organization in order to be very, very personally attached. And so any of the ways to reach out, you can get to any of us directly.
That's awesome. So guys, if you want to reach out to Ari, sounds like they are really open to personal connections. And we'll have some of the links, like their website, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that kind of stuff. We'll put those on our show notes. So go ahead and check them out. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Thank you so much for listening. This is What It Takes.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.